אז אנחנו קוראים בכתבי בעל הסולם, אנחנו
נראה... So we're reading from the writings of בעל הסולם. We're reading from Rabash. What is when Israel are in exile, the Shekhinah is with them in the work. We're starting from in the middle of the article, and now we can understand what we asked, what is the benefit in what our sages said. You can find the material at kabbalahmedia.info. Now we can understand what we asked. What is the benefit in what our sages said? When Israel are exiled, the Shekhinah is with them in the work.
As Rabbi Shimon said, everywhere they went to exile, divinity was with them. What does it mean in the work that he says about that? How much does the Creator love Israel? We should interpret that when a person feels that he is in exile, that is, that he tastes in the work the taste of the exile, and he wants to run away from the exile, the meaning would be that a person should believe that everywhere they went to exile with, divinity was with them. That is, that divinity let him taste the taste of exile.
With them means that the Shekhinah is attached to them, and they are not separated from the Shekhinah, the divinity. That they should say that is a descent. On the contrary, now the Shekhinah, the divinity, is giving him a push, so he will climb the degrees of Kedusha, of holiness, and dresses herself in a garment of descent. When a person knows and believes that this is so, it'll encourage him so he does not escape the campaign, or say that the work of bestowal is not for him, because he always sees that he is in states of ascents and descents, and he sees no end to these states and falls into despair. But if he walks in the path of faith and believes in the words of our sages, then he must say the opposite. If the order of the work of the rest of the people is proper, meaning that they feel themselves as whole and see that, thank God, they are observing mitzvot, pray, and learn Torah. And what else do they need? It means that they do not have from above special treatment every step of the way, or are told if their work is proper or not. This is similar to people learning in a seminary. Assume there are 100 people in the seminary, and some town needs a rabbi. The townspeople send a request to the principal of the seminary to send them a rabbi. Then the principal chooses a team that will test which of the students can be a rabbi there. From among the 100 students in the seminary, the best ones are chosen. Assume that 5 students are selected and tested. The test contains questions that they must answer. However, they need not to answer all the questions. Rather, if they answer 90%, they are already considered worthy of being among the select elite of the people. But some answer less than 90. Can it be said that those students in the seminary that are tested in Torah and wisdom are ordinary people, while the 99% of the students in the seminary who are not tested, are they fine in Torah and wisdom? And because they are greater, they do not need to be tested? Likewise, here in the order of the work, there is a rule. Let us say, for example, that 99% of the workers of the Creator are not tested to see if they are fine. That is, they are not shown their situation, whether they are fine in their Torah and work. If they are not tested, certainly everyone thinks that he is fine. But let us say that those 5% who can achieve wholeness and be admitted into the king's palace, these people are tested. They are shown from above their true state in Torah and mitzvot, so they may know what to correct. The corrections are called faith, prayer, and labor. This is similar to what Bala Sulam said about the verse, and he said, "I beseech you, please show me your glory." And the Lord said, "Behold, here is a place with me." Our sages said, "With me" is an acronym in Hebrew for faith, prayer, and labor. Through these corrections, it is possible to achieve real wholeness. Accordingly, we can see what is the real way in Torah and mitzvot. The way is to achieve dvikut with the Creator, called equivalence of form, by which we are rewarded with life. As it is written, "For with you is the source of life." Also, ascents and descents are given to the capable ones, who are better capable of entering the king's palace. Accordingly, we should interpret what we asked. What does knowing that the Creator too will return from exile, like Israel, add to us in the work, as our sages said about the verse, "And the Lord your God returned from your captivity"? They said, "It was not said, 'will return,' but rather 'returned,' meaning that the Creator returned with them from the exiles." However, first, we must understand how can we speak of exile in relation to the Creator. Exile means that He has departed from the place where He was and had to go to foreign places and be governed by other kings. Also, he has no choice but to do and obey every wish of every ruler under whom he is. Yet, we must believe what is written, that the whole earth is full of his glory. Thus, how can we speak of exile in relation to the Creator? We should also understand toward whom we say that the Creator is in exile. In relation to himself, we cannot say, because we do not know his thoughts. As it is written in the Zohar, "There is no thought or perception in him whatsoever." Rather, all that we say in relation to the Creator is, as in, "By your actions we know you." Therefore, we must say that the Creator is in exile in relation to Israel. In other words, the people of Israel see that the Creator is in exile among the nations. Hence, we should understand how it is expressed that it seems to the people of Israel that he is in exile. Also, we should understand what is exile, and then we will be able to understand that one who is in exile feels the taste of exile. We should also know that concerning exile we find two discernments. One, when the people of Israel were in the Holy Land and had a temple, Nebuchadnezzar came, destroyed the temple, and exiled Israel from the land. As it is written, "There was a Jewish man in the capital, whose name was Mordechai, who had been exiled from Jerusalem." It follows that exile means that they had been exiled from a place of happiness and tranquility to go and suffer and wander and have no peace of mind. 2. We find that in the exile in Egypt, they were not exiled from a place of tranquility, but where they were, they began to feel that they were in exile. They saw that they were enslaved to Pharaoh, king of Egypt, meaning that what the king of Egypt required of them, they had no free choice. but had to obey his wish in everything he demanded of them. Accordingly, what does it mean that the Creator was exiled from his place? After all, it is written the whole earth is full of his glory. So how can we say that the Creator has been exiled from his place onto another place? According to the second interpretation of exile, such as the exile in Egypt, when Pharaoh, king of Egypt, ruled over the children of Israel, they felt exile in this. But how can we speak of exile in relation to the Creator? For does anyone govern him that we can say that the Creator is in exile? Certainly, when we speak of exile in relation to the Creator, it is only from the perspective of the creatures. That is, it is according to the attainment of the creatures that there is the matter of exile and redemption. Sometimes they perceive the Creator as a great king dwelling in his palace, with seraphim and animals and wheels of holiness standing around him. And sometimes they perceive him as a king who has been exiled from his palace, captive under the rule of another king. This is regarded as the king being in exile. Accordingly, we should interpret that the people of Israel went out of the land of Israel and the temple was ruined. In the work, we should interpret that the people of Israel went out and did not feel the flavor of Torah and mitzvot. And their heart, which was a place for feeling the Kedusha, called the temple, that place was ruined. The other king, called an old and foolish king, conquered their hearts and took all the kelim of Kedusha out of there. This means that he took out all the thoughts of Kedusha that they had in their hearts and inserted them, instead, into an idol in the palace of the Lord. That is, where previously there was Kedusha, he took out all the thoughts of Kedusha, where Kedusha means thoughts for the sake of the Creator. Yet he conquered their hearts and installed in their hearts thoughts that are only about their own benefit. This is regarded as a foolish old king conquering the temple and exiling Israel from within it. That is, the quality of Israel is no longer in their bodies. This is as it is written, God, the nations have come into your inheritance. They have defiled the temple of your holiness and laid Jerusalem in ruins. That is, the quality of Israel departed from their hearts, and in their stead came Gentiles. Accordingly, this means that the Creator has been exiled with them. That is, he departed from his palace because of Israel, meaning that this is how they feel, that he does not have the importance that they felt before they were exiled from the land of Israel. What is the benefit of the Creator being in exile with them? We can understand this by what Baal HaSulam said about the words of our sages. A person does not sin unless a spirit of folly has entered him. People ask about this, why did a spirit of folly enter, so he would sin? He said that since there is a rule that the eye sees and the heart covets, if a person sees something bad, whether in sight or in thought, he must come to covet it. Therefore, although he cannot prevent this with his eyes, because both thoughts and looking come without any preparation, hence, this is still not considered a sin. But from this, we come into a sin that is called coveting. If a person immediately repents on the seeing, he will not come to covet and will not sin. But if a person does not immediately repent the seeing, he must come to the sin called coveting. a correction was made above, that in order for man not to blemish the glory of the King, he took us out of him the spirit of wisdom and installed in him the spirit of folly. Thus we see that even in the courthouse of below, a fool is not punished in the same manner as a sane person. It follows that here, when Gentiles entered his heart, and he does not feel the taste of life in Torah and mitzvot, it is considered that for him the Creator too is in exile. In that state, he does not have the faith in the Creator he had had before he suffered the descent. Hence, the blemish is not so great. And there is another meaning to the Creator being in exile with them. When the people of Israel are in exile, when the nations govern them, the Creator is in exile too. Therefore, we ask for the Creator to come out of exile, since we must be careful not to pray for self-love, but only for the sake of the Creator. Hence, when he asked the Creator to take his people out from exile, he's asking for the sake of the creatures and not for the sake of the Creator. For this reason, when we believe that the Creator too is in exile, we ask for the sake of the Creator. That is, we pray for the glory of heaven. It is as it is said in Litany, "Have mercy on us, O Lord. Why should a nation say, 'Where is their God?' For your sake, be merciful with us and do not delay." It follows that by knowing that the Creator too suffers from the exile, this gives them a place to pray for the Creator and not for himself. However, can we say that he is in exile and the Gentiles seemingly control him as they control Israel? The answer is that since the purpose of creation is to do good to his creations, and over the good that the creatures must receive, there was a correction that they will aim to bestow. Hence, when Israel are in exile among the nations, when they are placed under the governance of self-love, they cannot receive the delight and pleasure clothed in Torah and mitzvot. For this reason, they cannot feel the taste of life that there is in Kedusha. And since the exile among the nations of the world is on them, anything they will receive will have the taste of the concealment of the face. But since the Creator desires the existence of the world, he must dress himself in dresses that are not of Kedusha. That is, he bestows upon the world vitality in dresses of corporeality, meaning that he bestows upon the world pleasure and life only in corporeal things. This means that the world can receive delight and pleasure only in dresses called envy, lust, and honor. That is, he illuminates and sustains the world with dresses of klipot, the shells, and dresses that separate them from the Creator, since these pleasures come clothed in kelim of self-love. It follows that the Creator suffers from their being in exile, meaning that while they are placed under the governance of the nations of the world, the Creator must hide himself from his sons so they would not know that he is the one giving them the taste of exile in Torah and mitzvot, and that they find all the life in vessels of reception. That is, this correction of having pleasures in vessels of reception and being unable to feel the taste in Torah and mitzvot, the Creator made the correction so they would not blemish the Kedusha and to prevent everything going to the klipot. That is, they would not draw farther from Kedusha by feeling more flavor in self-reception. Since wherever the pleasure is greater, they move farther into the vessels of reception, which separates them from Kedusha. It therefore follows that by knowing that the Creator is in exile, that he must hide himself as though he is in exile. By this, a person can know that there are no klipot in the world, but that a person should ask for everything only from the Creator, and there is no other force.
Any questions? There are no questions. Okay.
No.
Well?
Friend from Israel is asking, is it necessary that a person will be under the governance of Pharaoh until he receives the reforming light, and that a person has a force to go against Pharaoh?
It all depends on how he feels, on his environment, where he is. The person determines that in his feeling. Either he is in exile, or he's in the desert, or on a mountain, or in the tearing of the Red Sea, or in the land of Israel, or in Babylon, or in the temple. The person determines that. What does it mean he determines it? The way that he depicts it to himself. He has nothing against which to measure. Yes? Well, if there are no... Yes, Danny?
He says that a person has corrections that are called emuna, faith, labor.
This is written about that you are with me, iti. Iti means that they attain the Creator through prayer, faith, and exertion. Well, isn't that clear what it is? Emuna, faith, means to bestow without any promise in advance regarding anything, just to have a pure, clean force of bestowal. That's faith. And we attain that through prayer. Then we come to the prayer through the exertion. So you have exertion, prayer, and faith. Yes.
I was impressed by what was written. That's it. That's the work.
Yes, everything is in that, yes. What else can you add?
It can be some sort of slogan to repeat all the time.
This is what it says, yes. That's what it says. That Moses asks, show me your glory, and he says, my glory is in that place, which is iti, with me. By that you come to my revelation, to coming close to me, to being in adhesion with me. So it's exertion first, then prayer, and then faith. And with the force of faith, we then discover the Creator according to the intensity of the faith. In the light of chassadim, which is faith. So then according to the intensity of the chassadim, we discover the light of chokhmah, which is the revelation of the Creator to the created being. Okay. Who else? Yes.
Rav. Read an excerpt and ask about it. A question about it. Because they can't fulfill the purpose of life of Kedusha, the holiness, because the exile of the nations of the world govern them, that this is all that they will receive, this is all that they will taste the concealment of the face. But since the Creator desires the existence of the world, he must dress himself in dresses that are not of Kedusha. That is, he bestows upon the world vitality and dresses a corporeality, meaning that he bestows upon the world pleasure and life only in corporeal things. That means that the world can receive delight and pleasure only in dresses called envy, lust, and honor. That is, he illuminates and sustains the world with dresses of klipot, dresses that separate them from the Creator, since these pleasures come clothed in kelim of self-love. It follows that the Creator suffers from their being in exile. My question is, what does it mean that the Creator suffers from this? If he started this whole operation,
he suffers from it since the dwellers of the world want to achieve pleasures from dressing clothes that are not of sanctity. Rather, it's better for them to receive a little bit of illumination that only gives them vitality, a false vitality, which is called this life, our corporeal life. And that's it. And this truly causes suffering to the upper force, since he cannot bestow as he truly would have liked to bestow, to fill up the entire desire that he created. This is considered that he's suffering. This is called the sorrow of divinity. That there is a great, infinite upper light that wants to fill up the great kelim, and instead of this, these kelim are restricted, shrink down to the corporeal, transient, small pleasures that we ourselves know that there is nothing in them. However, nevertheless, we cannot rise above them. Why can't we rise above them? Because to rise above them is possible only together. There is no person who is a hero. The hero is one who forcefully connects with others, and then through their common force, he is capable, together with the others, to rise above the separation. And in this common plea, in the unification, he starts to receive that treasure that the Creator has prepared. What?
Yes, but he created this whole operation, this whole setup, and it's hard to get into his head. How can it be that this whole setup causes him to suffer if he decided this whole operation is set up?
Yes, but what can you do if he wants you to grow when you don't want to grow?
But I want to. We all want to.
Oh, you do want to? Do you have children?
Yes.
And are you happy with them?
No.
No? Okay. So, you are in adhesion with the Creator, then. He also has a problem with his children. Any other questions?
Rabash writes, that why does this spirit of foolishness enter, that there's a rule that the heart does, why did a spirit of folly enter so he would sin? He said that since there's a rule that the eye sees and the heart covets, if a person sees something bad, whether in sight or in thought, he must come to covet it. Therefore, although he cannot prevent this with his eyes, because both thoughts and looking come without any preparation, hence this is still not considered a sin.
A sin, right. But only if it reaches coveting in the heart, then it is a sin already.
He writes, but from this we come into a sin that is called coveting.
Right.
So the question is,
so the Creator seemingly prevents it.
Can you explain this, how it works?
As he writes, that With the eye, you see, and before it truly reaches the heart, and you practically enjoy it so that it will be considered a sin, there is something there that prevents this from you.
In the next paragraph he writes, if a person immediately repents on the seeing, he will not come to covet and will not sin.
Yes? It's like a game where you have to get to know how it works inside.
How can it be? What does he mean to immediately repent on the seeing?
This is only if, and again we're coming back to the same principle, if you have an environment, through the influence of the environment, if you have an environment and you come to a state where you're under the control of the environment, then they rule you. And you cannot sin. There is a field around you that does not give you the possibility to fall.
What does it mean, sin?
A sin. There is only one sin. That I allow myself to hate others. And this stands against the single rule of love your friend as yourself. It is a simple thing. The fact that you maliciously don't want to keep love your friend as yourself. This is called a sin. This is why you go to a society and you try to be under the influence of the environment so that they will guard you. And this is how the society does it for each and every one. And then you're certain that you will not sin. It's that they throw you out a rope and they bring you out of a prison. It is all the same principle.
In connection to this, what's hating others? How do we interpret the coveting? In connection to this, what am I coveting?
It's not coveting, it's unpleasant. Isn't it unpleasant? Or isn't there some joy in your heart when you hate someone and you want to break through towards him with some bad thought? We get pleasure from that, because the evil inclination then enjoys. Okay.
Tov.
Well.
No
questions, everything is good. Yes.
Many times we say that the only sin is not to attribute everything to none else besides Him.
This is with respect to the Creator. You have it with respect to the Creator and with respect to the created beings. Because we have Israel, the light, and the Creator is one. So, Israel with respect to the light, that is, love your friend as yourself. And Israel and the light with respect towards the Creator, this is, there is none else besides Him. Who was there? Eyal?
Towards the end of the article, he was talking about some correction. What is he explaining here? He says, and the correction, really, on the last page, towards the end, this correction that would be in the vessel of reception won't be felt in the Torah and Mitzvot, and that it would not blemish the Kedushan to prevent everything going to the Klipot.
Yes.
How, by feeling in it, my vessels of reception, will that prevent everything going to the Klipot?
No, they don't allow you to truly enjoy in the vessels of reception so that you will not receive the pleasures of the Klipot in order to receive. So that you will not receive the light of Chokhmah in order to receive. So there is a special prevention, some kind of a block or fuse that doesn't allow you to do it.
So there won't be a full pleasure.
It follows that the Creator suffers from their being in exile, meaning that while they are placed under the governance of the nations of the world, the Creator must hide himself from his sons. He must hide himself so they would not know that he is the one giving them the taste of exile in Torah and Mitzvot, and that they find all the life in the vessels of reception. He does that deliberately, the Creator. That is, this correction of having pleasures in vessels of reception and being unable to feel the taste in Torah and Mitzvot, the Creator made this correction so that they would not blemish the Kedusha. Right? That they have no flavor in Torah and Mitzvot. We don't understand what pleasure there is in bestowal. Truly, we don't understand it. But this was done on purpose so that if you would now see how many possibilities you have to reach in order to bestow and enjoy from that, you would come to in order to bestow in order to enjoy. So it would be then in order to enjoy, in order to receive. It would be to bestow in order to receive, which is the klipa, the shell.
Shemati, about the thief?
Says, yes, yes, catch the thief. So you got that, okay. Is that it? Yes.
Continuing the question of the friend previously asked, what does it mean that a creator suffers? How can a system suffer? How can an upper force suffer? Or maybe it's written from the feeling of the Kabbalists who understand the system, and they understand from their feeling that's the way that the Shekhinah, the divinity, is suffering.
I cannot explain it. Either we say about the upper force that he is like us, he has emotions like us, or we talk about him being on a higher degree than us. So he seemingly has an ultra sensitivity, some super sensitivity. We cannot talk about it. But it's simple that simply if you talk about the Creator, you have to understand this is a huge, round, integral, global, complete system. Why? Because we discover him in such a way. Boe, Creator, is Boe, come and see. Where can we actually do come and see? In the structure of Adam HaRishon, where everyone is connected together in order to bestow, and then the Creator is revealed as the general force of bestowal and love. So there cannot be a force of love and bestowal without having the opposite form, which is the force of hatred and sorrow, meaning sorrow because of disconnection, and then pleasure because of connection. This is why we ascribe to that same force these two ends.
It's just a point that's very confusing, because many times we say that it's a system. It's a law. And when you say that a law suffers, it's a bit confusing. The language confuses.
I understand you, but there's nothing we can do about it. It says that Torah speaks in the words of people. We will not understand it until we will truly build such a demonstration inside of us. There is no creator without a created being. Rather, we must revive the system, keep it, and then we will understand how we can relate to the creator. And the creator means all of us together, when we will connect together in the right way, without any boundaries, in pure bestowal. This you will call the Creator, meaning not that there is a matter of connection between us. When we, all of us are connected, 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 all of our connections together, this is still us. This is called Shekhinah, divinity, and what fills up the Shekhinah, this is the Creator, the dweller. It is called the inclusive one, that you, by your discrete actions, when you correct the connections between everyone, you reach a state where you attain the integral force, the complete global force. So by counting ones, billions and billions of ones and ones and ones that become connected, even though they're all connected, but they're still ones. It is still the Shekhinah, divinity. But when it becomes completely, ultimately connected, and its perfection, its wholeness is revealed, then it is the dweller, the creator. Well, yes.
Rav, it's written, and when asking of the Creator to bring him out of exile, he finds that he's asking for the benefit of the creatures and not for the Creator. And if we believe that the Creator is in exile too, means that we ask for the benefit of the Creator. How can we always... Who are we asking for?
You need more of... this verse requires further explanation. Anyone else? Otherwise, we're just kind of spinning around it, but...
New York! New York!
Shamim?
Yes. Shamim.
Yes, we hear you.
To continue the question, we learn that galut, exile, is what we discover, that we are disconnected from the connection with the Creator. And Herod writes that we actually see the Creator is in exile. The Creator is in exile amongst the nations. Who's in exile here?
You can say this way or that way. From the side of the Kelim, we are in exile from the vessels of bestowal, from the force of bestowal. From the side of the Creator, he is in exile because he wants to be revealed in the vessels of bestowal as the one who dwells inside the divinity, Shekhinah. We need to put the Shekhinah back together, this system of connection between us, and then it is upon him. Accordingly, he will have the possibility to fill the system with the force of mutual bestowal, with the upper light.
So it's like one half is the inner work, another half is dissemination.
Yes. Yes. But dissemination, we also need to do it with the goal, with the direction, with the intention that we are doing it, we're creating a connection between us so that we will have the power to connect to ourselves more and more parts of the soul of Adam HaRishon. That is, dissemination then becomes the main thing here. They won't allow us to be the Rosh unless we will be concerned about the goof in order to take care of it. Okay? Good, we have no... Oh, Peter.
Раф, вы говорили, что ненависть — это грех, а беспричинная ненависть тоже можно назвать.
Said that hate is a sin, and unfounded hatred can also be called a sin?
Hatred is a sin, and unfounded hatred, of course, yes. But unfounded hatred is what we have by nature. I simply hate, I reject everyone, I don't want to feel them as close to me. I have no connection to begin with anyone. Food, sex, family, money, honey, knowledge. Yes. If anybody goes into these emotions, this framework, then I can relate nicely to him, because then my ego it promotes me in this way. But if not for that, And here it is the opposite. Here we specifically need to think about how do we discover the shattering, because without the revelation of the shattering we can just keep on spinning, and it seems to us that we're correcting something, doing something, we're advancing. But the most important is, first of all, the revelation of the shattering, the revelation of evil, the revelation of the corruption. And if the corruption is revealed already, then all we have to do is reach a state where we will ask for correction, so that the corruption will hurt me, will pain me, so that I will ask. And the children of Israel sighed from the work. I need to try to do it, to try to do it by myself, but also to know in advance that I will not be able to reach that. That's good also. Even if there are those who say, no, I need to try all the way to correct everything by myself, and if I won't reach it, then I will turn to the Creator, so I don't just turn to Him. Then I have the ability whom to talk to and what to turn with, so that I'm not just turning from an empty place. But that's incorrect. It is incorrect. Try to immediately turn to Him. And then according to that, you will get, as from a good, patient teacher, you will start to get some guidance, corrections. Ask this way, check this way, look that way. Do you have it or don't you? The ingredients of the prayer, the topic of the prayer itself, so that indeed you will have true man. Bit by bit, we need to update it. It is written that the Torah was given only to those who eat man. So we need to truly eat it, meaning to chew and swallow, to chew and swallow, bit by bit. This is why the essence of the work is in, as much as possible, in a dialogue. A dialogue with the Creator.
No,
but again, you bring to Him the environment, the society, divinity, where you want this connection to exist, so that He will be revealed. These are things that are very concrete, not scattered. And besides that, you don't need anything. Like a little child who comes crying that he is unable to fix something, or something is broken, or he can't do something, so he comes crying to the grown-up so that the grown-up will do it. And this is what we need, and nothing but that. Of course, it requires many preparations. The greatness of the Creator, lowliness, the goal, the importance of the goal, etc. But actually, this is what we have before us.
How do we start this dialogue? How do we develop it?
When we discover something that seems wrong, immediately we turn to the Creator. How many times did I tell you about this matter of why didn't you ask?
Because it's not natural. It's not the first thing that I want to do. It's not the first thing that comes out of me.
It's true. So the society should remind you.
Okay.
Yes.
The par between the broken and unlimited, infinite of the Creator. This is the Kli, and in this Kli, I want the light to enter to close the par, the gap.
Let's see. Yes, for the time being. Okay. Okay, so we can continue. We have a little bit of time left. Who do we have there in the end? Yes.
Can you, from today's point, talk about why didn't you ask?
Because it's not simple. It requires an effort. It has to be the view of the environment. This has to be the view of the environment, which means that everyone should know about it and remind each other about it several times a day. Did we ask or didn't we ask?
So when Rabash told you, why didn't you ask? Is why didn't you build an environment, not just for no reason?
Well, it wasn't the same conditions as now. But why didn't you ask is something necessary. Until this very day, always, until the end of correction, why didn't you ask? A person can always catch himself that it's not that he was negligent, but how can I say regarding the prayer or the request? What? No. Well, let's say he was negligent. He didn't invest forces on time. He didn't precisely put the right good sting to it. Well, you will find the words by yourselves. Is that it? Okay, yes.
Organize all our meetings throughout the day that we will have a plea to the Creator.
Do whatever you want. I do not get into it. This is your work. I give you the method and you have to actualize it. There is a certain limit to how much I'm allowed to explain, how much I was given to explain, and beyond that, you have to do it by yourselves. Otherwise, I'd be stealing from you the corrections, and this is forbidden.
Simply can take one subject and always circle around it. Request from the Creator.
So speak with the friends and do it. Why do you ask me? I'm not going to do your homework instead of you. Okay? Yes?
This plea is, why didn't I ask or why didn't we ask?
No. This is how I heard it. Why didn't you ask? It was personally towards me. Yes, Moti.
How do you express when a teacher takes away the work of the student?
A child comes back from school and he has homework. I don't know, nowadays do they still give homework to children? And he doesn't quite manage to do the homework. So his merciful mother sits in his place and she does the homework. And the child the next day goes to school and he gets a perfect grade, or 95 out of 100, right? What does the mother do? Did she do something good or bad?
Very bad.
So what do you want me to do? This is called the sorrow of raising children, raising sons. On the one hand, you're sorry, and I'm sorry to hear about such things, and sometimes to hear the questions, and the fact that you're negligent in your turning to the Creator throughout the day. You don't discuss these things enough, and you don't know precisely where the emphasis should be in your meetings, in your Zoom meetings, but there's nothing that we can do about it. Whatever the mind doesn't do, time does. What does it mean, time? Well, time, it's not good, but nevertheless, we do have in its time, be'ito and achishena, hastening. So if we don't reach it by way of hastening, thing, then it works in its time. The counter nevertheless turns and turns and turns, and then it reaches such turns where we feel bad. So we advance. And again, we don't want to do advance by ourselves, so the wheel keeps turning. And again, we feel bad after 1,000 different cycles, let's say. And this is how it works.
Yes. So if the Rav, the teacher, pushes too much material, giving too much to the student, that's a flaw in terms of the correction?
This depends on the society, because the society is diversified. Sometimes they give materials according to the few people that are the most advanced, but usually I do it, let's say, according to the 75%. Those who come to the lesson every day, I aim towards them. That's it. Vlad, what?
The last part, that by a person knowing that the Creator is in exile, that he must hide himself as though he is in exile, by this a person can know that there are no klipot in the world, but that a person should ask for everything only from the Creator, and there is no other force.
So?
What do you want to say by that?
That you will hide the Creator, then the Creator will be revealed. This is called revelation through concealment.
What does it mean that I'll conceal him? That it's concealed on everything.
He is concealed, but if you will start concealing him for your desire, you don't want to discover him, rather you want to do everything in order to bestow above my vessels of reception, then in such a way you will discover him.
So he's revealed, and I need to conceal him.
Yes. Yes? You said it precisely.
How can that be done?
Well, try, then we will talk.
No.
Well?
Me? Ashkelon.
Shalom, Rav.
Hello, friends. Hello, Rav.
Hello.
I have a question like this. If I see in my mind hatred, bad things, and I still need to go above reason,
according to which above reason will you go? According to which above reason will you go?
That my friends need me to rise above the hatred.
No, but if I don't have hatred, if I don't have rejection, if I don't have a corporeal reason, meaning in order to receive, above what will I go?
Not to receive, but to bestow.
To bestow is possible only on the condition that you want to receive. Spirituality is built only on top of corporeality. As much as the will to receive is strong, cruel, pulling towards itself, accordingly, you can resist it and build spirituality. Kiev.
Кто изгонял Творца из Израиля и это не было ли нежеланием людей признавать себе подобного, то есть любить ближнего?
Who exiled the Creator from Israel? That's the first part of the question, and the second part was not understood.
Repeat, please.
Кто изгонял Творца из Израиля, и это не было ли следствием людей не любить ближнего?
The exile of the Creator from Israel is a result of people in unfounded hatred, that they didn't love each other?
Yes, because they did not love each other, the Creator was concealed. Yes. Fix your microphone. Okay, friends, actually the lesson is finished.
You don't want to go home. We should have a nigun. Okay.
Nigun.
So it's not over yet? Okay.
Lie, 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 lie